Pat's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number three. We made it to hour number three. Good Monday to you. Thank you for tuning in. I'll give you a preview of what's coming up tomorrow on the show. Our usual guest from Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor, will be with us. Also got United States Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. She will be with us. And a colleague of mine from Breitbart, Alan Bakari, we're going to talk about big tech. So a lot of reasons for you to tune in tomorrow. So to come on the program today, Congressman Mo Brooks joins us at the bottom of the hour. But join us now. Very pleased to have my next guest. Here on Sean Sullivan, the guy who follows me on this very microphone once a month, the second Tuesday of every month, but he has come in to talk to this show. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran with us. Sheriff, how are you this morning?
Doing wonderful. Glad to be with you, Jeff, and with your listeners.
Hey, thank you for doing this. First off, we were talking during the break about COVID-19 and the jail here, the county jail, is not really feeling. Y'all done a really good job of preventing the spread within the jail population.
That's right. We've got 1,260 something inmates, but none of them have active COVID. In the last 6 months, we've probably had a total of 70 something that have had it, and all have recovered from it. No deaths of inmates. We did lose one healthcare worker, but it's just a phenomenal job that they're doing. It's a lower rate in the jail than it is in the community.
Right.
And there's no such thing as social distancing in the jail, so I applaud the our employees down there.
You just it's a controlled environment, and you're able to really keep an eye, keep a watch on what's coming
in. Yeah, quarantine the new arrestees. We quarantine them from the rest of them, make sure they don't have it so we don't bring it in. And then, of course, the corrections officers wear PPE and stuff like that around them.
So then that's outstanding, though, to hear stories like that. Given those circumstances, other than the jail situation, though, how have things been? How has it been performing the role of sheriff and your department under these circumstances?
Well, I think things are going good for us in Mobile County. We're not obviously having the problems that we see on the national news on a daily basis. Of course, I'm overly concerned with the movement against police and the limelight that we're under, and the fact that there'll probably be some approaches to change the tactics of law enforcement, and so much of that is by people that misunderstand law enforcement tactics. But law enforcement, we've been trying to reform ourselves for years. We're not against reform, but we have to have the support from elected officials and budgetary people. But until you raise the standards, you're going to always have a few bad apples get in there amongst you. You weed them out, but guess what? Some more get in because you have such a high turnover.
Well, that has to be very difficult to in these circumstances because, this last year was very tough for law enforcement in Alabama with the officer deaths. And then on top of that, you've got this political situation. And having to put all that together, I can't imagine.
Yeah, we pay for the sins of somebody in four or five states away or something, if it happens and it leads on the national news and people jump to conclusions. And we don't have those type incidents here in Mobile County, but yet we get accused of it and stuff such as that. But we're going to work through it. It's all we can do is work through it, and hopefully we'll get to a good end at the end of all this.
Well, what do you make of this unrest we're seeing around the country? And it seems like law enforcement's hands are tied in a lot of these places dealing with this.
I think it's clearly there are those underlying currents, the Antifa and others that want to overthrow this government, really and truly. I think that's what's behind it. And they've hijacked the Black Lives Movement. There's a big debate whether they call it a movement or an organization. Well, I guess you could say the movement is one thing, but the organization's been hijacked by a bunch of terrorists and stuff, and so now as they have these protests, you've got the other people coming in between them and wreaking havoc and attacking the officers and they're just out to destroy this government, this nation.
Yeah, because you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. Everybody's watching. Everybody's got a cell phone camera or something. I mean, this is probably something that you're gonna have to start, I guess, in these academies or whatever, how to deal with these situations where you got a bunch of people, filming you while you're just trying to do your job.
Oh yeah, a couple of years ago in our annual retraining, we started some role playing where we have somebody, an officer, somebody play this crazy crazy screaming fool or something in the face of the officers and filming, and why are you violating my rights, why are you this, why are you that, you did this, why'd you stop me, and screaming at the officers. And so they role play that, and we've had a few instances where people have tried that, and the officers just as cool and calm and going about their business while some lunatoon is yelling at them, you know. But so we're doing the best we can to prepare for that and prepare our officers, and I think it's working. But at the end of the day, though, we're going to enforce the law here, and we showed them that we would when we had some radicals try to block Airport Boulevard and stuff, and you know, they got arrested, and they thought they were going to quickly go down there and bond out, but the city magistrates and all said, well, we want to have a bond hearing for them, so they, we held them for 72 hours, which is perfectly legal, and you know, it kind of upended them a little bit. You know, where some of these organizations put up bond money for the protesters that, that commit violence.
Yeah, well, I'm amazed at the level of people are willing to take it, but it seems like it, maybe it started out as an honest, sincere thing that we need to look at police reform, but just like everything in a presidential election year, just gets hyper politicized, and here we are.
That's right. And the movement or whatever it was, it got hijacked by the Antifa and other radicals. And you know, it's going to take a while to get control back on these streets, and you know, we're going to see a reshuffling of the populations in this country, where people are leaving these major cities like rapidly, and those cities are going to, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see New York back in the bankruptcy days they were back in the, what was the, 70s or 80s.
The Dinkins days, pre-Giuliani days.
Absolutely.
When you, because when I was a kid, you remember going to New York and you walked down Broadway and you had to step over needles and, you know, and then Giuliani came and kind of cleans up and it, Bloomberg, and now you go back up there with, under de Blasio, and it's back to what it was probably mid-1980s, it seems like.
Carrying in that direction quite rapidly.
And that it's all, that a lot of that is just the law enforcement policy has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, when he stopped the stop and frisk up there in New York City, which is a U.S. Supreme Court approved tactic by law enforcement that you have the right under certain circumstances to stop somebody and frisk them. And the idea is that you intercede before they commit a serious crime or a serious assault. But when they took that away from the police, and then he took the 500 something member squad off the streets that did the interdiction of you know, the undercover teams, and look what's happened. Crime's gone through the roof. They're robbing people in broad daylight on Billionaire Row up there. And so you know, you'll have people like that moving out and taking the money elsewhere, just like Trump moved from New York to Florida.
Do you think that happens? Maybe not on that. I mean, obviously it's going to happen on in Americans' major cities, but I mean, think it happens maybe on a level like Mobile, where people move from the city to out to the county or out into more rural areas?
Yeah, we've seen some of that. I mean, when people live in bad neighborhoods, of course, sometimes people are trapped in bad neighborhoods, and usually it's tied up with socioeconomic situations. But the people that can move out of there will move out. And, of course, a lot of that is driven by schools. You know, if you build a new school somewhere, then new neighborhoods develop around the school, and that goes back to urban development. You know, how do you build a city and stuff? The things that play such a major role. But schools are a huge impact in the migration of people.
Yeah, and, you know, it's all these quality of life indicators that lead to that. A couple of things I wanted to get into while we got you here.
Sure.
We were talking maybe a little bit during the break, though. Back in March, before COVID came along, you were leading this effort to do away with the supermajority on the city council.
Yeah, I was.
Well, where is that right now?
Well, it's still working, but it's kind of undercurrents right now because I can't get out and speak to large groups of people and you know, different monthly meetings and all, but we're still, the movement is still there, and as soon as we get a little further into past this COVID, I'll kick it on forward. We've got several hundred, maybe over 1,000. We need 5,000 something signatures to change a supermajority. And then, as I've said, that the supermajority has held the city of Mobile back for some 40 years, and it's almost impossible to get five people to agree on something. And it just goes against the American way of majority rules. And five out of seven is like 74%. Well, who can get anything done when you have to have 74%? And so, as I pointed out, and a couple of years ago, it took them a couple of years to get fire chief. And took them almost several extra months to approve a budget and other things. But I believe it had a role just recently in them choosing the recent fire chief, because I knew that I had pointed it out to them. And quite frankly, some city officials have told me they believe that played a role, because I was going to call them out again on it. And we just need to move forward.
It's a steeper hurdle than the Senate has to face to overcome a filibuster.
You're exactly right.
And that's, to us, we talk about, since we federalize and nationalize everything, people can relate to that. That is a difficult hurdle to overcome. This threshold is even higher than
even
that.
Even higher. And see, what started this was, you know, the group of West Mobile, over 10,000-12,000 people wanted to come into the city of Mobile, and that would have put us over the 200,000 mark of population, which then puts you up into a higher level of public safety grants. And so the director of public safety pointed that out, and but for the petty political ambitions of three individuals, they voted against it and allowing them to come in. And so I've said, where else in America does a 4-3 vote lose, you know, only in Mobile? And so we've gone down from, for 47 years, we've lost population. And in places like Fairhope have grown 400-500%, Daphne 200%, Tuscaloosa, I think, 47%, and Huntsville something 30-40%. And yet we're losing. In fact, since the last data was put out, we've lost an additional 3,000 more people. We're down to 189,000. And if we would allow annexation, Mobile could actually be the largest city if the people in the outlying jurisdiction were wanting to come in. And so for 20, 25 years, we've courted those people to try to come in. And sometimes they wanted to, sometimes they didn't. But now they want to, and we need to strike while the fire is hot.
Well, if we try to correct this trend in other ways besides just adding more people by annexation, really, where is the problem? Why are people heading out of town?
Well, it's really probably, you'd say, what we spoke of earlier, maybe new neighborhoods or something. Somebody might want to move into a different neighborhood or buy a newer home as they progress up in their situation. And Mobile within the city itself has just run out of a lot of areas to build new neighborhoods and stuff. And of course, some of it's driven by schools. The schools were built up out there. But so that's kind of driven it. But again, most of those people are Mobilians. Many of them did not realize that they moved out of Mobile when they moved, only to find out, whoa, I'm not in the city anymore. I don't have a vote, but everything I do is more or less controlled by the city. And as I've often said, so goes the air, goes Mobile, you know. And if you're not growing, you're dying. And most all cities, that's how they grow, is through annexation. Sure, you want some internal stuff, but you know, the other thing that was brought out, wasn't even brought out, we would have had more money for housing, your HUD grants and stuff. You'd have more money there, and that's one of the things that the city complains about, is not having enough affordable housing. Well, again, they shot themselves in the foot by not allowing the annexation that would have gave more affordability. And then, of course, the western section has the newer infrastructure, so in essence, you would be taking taxes from those people who are willing to pay and probably not have to use as much of it in the repair and maintenance of their infrastructure, and again come into the city. So it just got me, I guess, fired up, and I just saw it such a wrong thing. And the years I was police chief, I just saw it was just a terrible situation on trying to get things done. And of course, I used one example one time. I was in the mayor's office one time, and we needed a vote for an amended budget, and this particular council member said, Mike, I need $50,000 for my thing. And he says, you got it, for my vote. You know, I thought, whoa, is that politics or is that a shakedown, you know? And
yeah.
I still had never figured it out, but it was for something to personally benefit that guy, name a building after him, and he wanted to finish his building. See, and I just thought, man, something about that just didn't pass the smell test for me.
Because you could really, one member can really, over the
council,
can hold
it hostage. Well, that's what happens when you have a super majority.
Yeah.
You just take turns who's going to hold out so I can get some, you know. And there's so much wasteful spending in the city because of that. And, you know, I'm at a point in time that I'm willing to spend what little political capital I have to try to push it along. And when you speak to the realtors, they get hit with this stuff all the time, that people don't want to come relocate their businesses or whatever into Mobile because they see Mobile as a dying city. And look at what all we've done. We funded the steel plants and the air manufacturing, all like this, but we're still not benefiting because people are moving around on the outside. And we need to capture that by annexing these areas.
All right, we're going to take a quick time out. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
It's where I found Jesus, where I
back to the Jeff Flores Show at FM Talk 106.5. Coming to the next segment, Congressman Mo Brooks will be with us, so stay tuned for that. Still joining us in studio, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran is with us. He's got a few moments remaining with him. Sheriff, the Governor's Gambling Task Force, you're on it. Anything going on with that? Any news?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. We've been meeting steadily ever since she appointed us. We've had a couple of in-person meetings, but we've had probably a dozen Zoom meetings. We've gotten really good at doing the Zoom meetings, and we've heard from all kinds of citizen groups and proponents and opponents, and we've divided into sub-committees, and we've all kind of been reporting back, so it's moving rather right along. And so I don't think it'll be a tremendously much longer time period before our committee reports to the governor.
She'll still get that report. I guess it was December 31st or something was like the...
That was what she originally asked for, but we're pretty confident we're going to be able to get through with it before then.
Yeah, so that's still moving along. Do you have any takeaways from that or to stay
tuned?
Well,
I don't want to really speak too much on it other than say that we have steadily been meeting. In fact, I've got a meeting in the morning, and so we'll be meeting in the morning on a conference Zoom, and again, we're moving right along, and we'll meet her request.
Yeah, I mean, with everything is tied up because of COVID. The legislature isn't meeting, and I remember when she appointed the group, there was some consternation because if we were going to do a lottery in Alabama, you would think you'd want to do it in this session if you waited any longer. Well, we know what happens at the tail end of a quadrennium. Mm-hmm. Things don't get done. But it turned out to be a moot point because of COVID.
Yeah.
So you think this will be something the legislature will be able to use in some capacity?
Yeah, I think it'll certainly be something that, I think the design is maybe take some of the political pressure off the legislature or something by having I guess you'd say we're a citizens group that from different walks of life, and we'll answer these questions. We're not making per se recommendations of what to do or whatever. We're just answering several questions that she put out in her executive order, and we'll get those questions answered. And I've learned, I knew quite a bit about gambling, but now I've learned a tremendous amount more about gambling, and I think that's what it is. There's some really peculiar things in the law and in compacts and with the IGRA that we've learned about with the Indians, certain rights that they have that's why you see so many Indian casinos, is because the law really supports them and gives them in many ways an upper hand with casino gambling. But it'll be a good report, and it'll be educational for everyone to read it.
I mean, do you look over at Mississippi with the casino? Does having that kind of gambling really create a criminal element or something that you guys in law enforcement additionally would have to deal with?
Well, by not having legalized gambling or regulated gambling, we already have crime. I mean, we have illegal gambling going around all over the state, and we have it in Mobile County too. And so it's sort of always been my position that if you could regulate gambling, and then you could help stomp out a lot of illegal gambling, because people are going to gamble. We know that. And they're going to go to Mississippi gamble or elsewhere or do it illegally. And, of course, Alabama's got a reputation of being one of the highest per capita of bookies in betting,
right?
Sports betting.
it's more of the culture of the, I guess, football.
It is. It's such a deep, most of it is done on football. Of course, basketball and NBA is a big, big thing, too. Of course, maybe there's so many games. But I remember working a gambling investigation back in the 80s with the FBI. We did a couple of major organized gambling and sports betting and stuff like that. But I remember even before then, somebody said that one of the things they liked about the Bear was that he always covered the spread, and I said, really? Because I didn't know that much about it, and people betting. But so I learned way back then all about the spread and how Las Vegas does it. But it's a fascinating thing to learn about.
Because when you talk to people, you talk about the possibility of gambling coming to your neighborhood, well, you're going to have pawn shops, a criminal element, it takes a toll on the community in some ways. But then,
well, the one advantage that maybe Alabama has is by having not, if Alabama moves in that direction, let's just say, and I don't know what they're going to do, but the advantage they have is last one to the dance has learned of everybody else's mistakes. And that thing about all the stuff on the corner things was that when video poker first came out about 20, 25 years ago, that was a threat that I think North Carolina somewhere had it, and it opened up all over on corner stores and stuff.
Right.
And it was terrible, and it wasn't regulated, but obviously we'd never have nothing like that. We've learned from everybody else's mistakes.
Sheriff, got to leave it there. We're out of time, but I thank you for coming. I really
enjoyed
appreciate it.
Being here with you, and I always enjoy listening to your listeners.
We'll do it again real soon. That was Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joining us. We got to take another break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.